Okay, it is 12:30. Why don't we go ahead and get started? I'm Andy Dannenberg. I work with the Healthy Community Design Initiative at the National Center for Environmental Health at CDC. And for the past five or six years at least, we've been working on health impact assessment issues. We have a distinguished panel today of others who have also been working on these issues, and I think we'll bring in some good ideas of kind of the range of how HIA is used. Many of you may have been here for the HIA session this morning, so we will not do much on sort of what HIA is. If I could get it down to one sentence, it's basically bringing health to the table. It's getting health issues into other sectors that affect health, but where the people making those decisions do not typically have a health background. And HIA can range in size, and there were always questions about how big does it have to be, what does it cost. My biased view that not everyone agrees with, it can be as small as a simple review by a health officer of a proposal that takes a few hours up to the 300-page report that takes many months and many hundreds of thousands of dollars. That what matters is bringing the issues of health to the table and having it considered in decisions, not how big that report is. Let's go ahead with speakers, and hopefully we can stay on time and have time for questions, because there always tend to be a lot of good questions about this topic. Our first speaker is Aaron Wernham. Aaron works with the Pew Charitable Trusts, and this has really been one of the big boosts to HIA, and that Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and Pew are now putting some fairly substantial resources into the expansion of HIA in this country. And Aaron can give a good overview of how that's being used and go from there. He has done a number of HIAs in various settings and has a lot of experience in the field.
Thanks, Andy. How many people were there for the morning HIA session? Okay, great. And can I just ask, I have a couple of slides to introduce the HIA process. For how many of you would that be useful? Okay, good. We'll do just a very, very quick introduction. You're not going to get a training today. So no disclosures. I think, you know, the thing that's driving this interest in health impact assessment, which I'll show you in the subsequent slides, is really taking off in the country over the last few years, I think is an increased awareness that that health is determined by many, many factors that are outside the typical purview of a health department or a medical clinic, and that actually the things that drive the determinants of health are public policies. They're new, you know, state or local ordinances or laws. They're new, you know, building permits and freeway designs and all manner of public decisions that actually really affect the conditions in the places where we live and work. And so I think there's been a lot of attention to this issue. The Commission on Social Determinants of Health from the World Health Organization really came out with a very strong statement that it is bad policies that are responsible for the fact that many people in the world don't enjoy the good health that's biologically possible. And there's been an increasing call now for health in all policies. There's an obvious challenge, though, here. We don't have any system set up for getting health into all policies. We, first of all, don't share a common language with a transportation planner or an environmental regulator. Public health professionals don't also, by the same token, I think, understand all of the constraints and practical or engineering or technical limitations that might constrain a decision that we see as being very important to health and would like to see a certain outcome for health, but there are lots of other considerations, and we aren't familiar with all of those. So there are few routine or formalized requirements for interaction between health and other sectors. There's really not a lot of funding, obviously, for new public health activities. So if we're talking about saddling health departments with this new responsibility for health in all policies, the obvious question is, well, with what for resources? And I think the other thing that's really driven some resistance within public health is the idea of going out on a limb. Lots of these policy decisions that we would like to see health in, we haven't studied very well. We don't have great epi evidence that proves some of the complex multifactorial linkages that we actually would talk about in a health impact assessment. So how do you actually go out on a limb and say something that really helps the planning process, helps a decision-making process, it provides valuable information, but isn't overreaching in terms of what we actually can say based on the available science? So health impact assessment is one tool to address some of these challenges. I think there are a lot of definitions out there. I like to instead describe what I think are some of the key points that define the field. It's first of all a systematic approach. It has a series of steps, which I'll show you, for informing decision making that takes place outside of the health sector. It facilitates collaboration with non-health policymakers. So it's a way to bring you, as a health expert, into interaction with people making a decision where they're not really thinking about health. It uses a combination of analytic techniques. There may be quantitative modeling. There may be qualitative or just pure descriptive analysis and literature review. It relies heavily on public participation and public input. It really takes a very pragmatic stance as far as the use of evidence and making predictions based on what you've got available to you. I think the philosophy is uncertainty is a fact of life. These decisions are going to get made anyway, and trying to come up with some evidence-based public health input is often going to be a good thing. And there's a real focus on making practical recommendations, not just things that would be ideal from a health standpoint, but actually recommendations that can be implemented within all of the constraints around a decision. So this is the process. It's described typically in most literature as either 5 or 6 steps. That's actually, in my opinion, fairly immaterial because the elements are very consistently described in almost every guide to the field. So screening is really a process where you systematically consider, is the HIA likely to add value? Is it feasible? Is it considering, for example, new information that's not already at the table? Do you have adequate evidence to answer some of those, the health questions that you see being important? And is the decision, in fact, important to health? Scoping, which is really where you build a framework for the HIA. You determine the important health effects in the affected populations and what evidence you have to answer the questions that you've raised for yourself. Assessment, which is typically broken into 2 steps, analyzing the baseline conditions, not just the health status of the affected community, but actually the conditions that are important to driving health and the conditions such as air quality that might be affected by a decision such as building a new highway. And then analyzing the likely health effects. Recommendations, which is fairly, I think, self-explanatory. Reporting, which is not just creating a report, but really is where you get into the nuances of disseminating the information and helping people actually act on it. So this is all about the relationship building between health actors and other people involved in decision-making roles and the people involved in community stakeholder organizations and roles, and really trying to figure out a way to get information out in a useful form to all of those stakeholders. And finally, monitoring and evaluation, which is, you know, there are really sort of 2 aspects of this. It's both monitoring the results of the HIA, you made a series of recommendations, what happened on the basis of that, and secondly, monitoring health outcomes, what actually is happening going forward as the recommendations are being implemented. So I'm just going to go over a little bit the status of HIA in the U.S. The CDC has worked on tracking this for a long time. We also are trying to get people to tell us whenever they know of an HIA that's been completed or one that's in progress. So these are the ones we know about. These are not screened as to whether they're good HIAs or bad HIAs or meet all the definitional criteria for HIAs. These are self-reported health impact assessments. These are the ones that we know in progress. It's really, and I think if you looked at this map a year ago, less than half maybe of these, it's really growing quite rapidly. It's been a lot of work on the West Coast, but it's by no means limited now to the West Coast anymore. lots of different sectors. I don't have a pointer, but the light blue and dark blue together represent transportation and built environment. So you can see that's been a huge focus where a lot of the momentum is. Lots of positive collaborations evolving between urban planners and health people, and in some cases now transportation is really picking up the ball and starting to use this as well. Outside of the built environment, lots of work in energy and natural resources, some, you know, emerging focus on agriculture and food. I think people are really interested in this, and a smattering of other topics that I just think are really interesting to look at from a health standpoint. We have a website, it's healthimpactproject.org. If you get there, it's pretty easy to find the button that allows you to tell us about your HIA work, and this is the way we're trying to help the field by tracking what all of you and others are doing in HIA. So we'd love it if you would let us know what's going on, and periodically we'll try to summarize the information we have in this format and put it out. So I think lots of increase in interest in HIA, and the question really is why? What is driving this? What's so great about doing health impact assessment? We did some evaluation work and have just begun to try to pull together some stories from people who've done HIA as to what were the outcomes? What did you actually accomplish with all this work? And I think there are sort of two categories of results. The first is specific recommendations that we've seen implemented. So 300 rent-controlled units were built into a plan to basically demolish an existing 300-unit public housing development to make 1,200 market-rate units, and that was not part of the initial development plans. HIA really pointed out that displacing those vulnerable residents was going to create a lot of health problems, and ultimately they were allowed to stay and have new housing permanently rent-controlled. For a new public transit line, HIA contributed to millions of dollars in public and private funds to clean up brownfields, and actually now I think they just broke ground on a new trail system that's funded in part by this. The HIA really highlighted the health benefits of this and also helped put a finer point on some of the design features to make sure that all of the communities that needed access to this sort of amenity would have it. We've seen a number of HIAs that have addressed the need for, if you're building a new development near congested roadways, central air filtration in buildings, noise mitigation measures, things that seem like no-brainers, but look, they aren't getting done. They're not getting, you know, housing development projects go up all over the country all the time, and these are issues that just aren't typically being considered. This is really groundbreaking, I think, policy work. We, in the North Slope of Alaska, got new air and water quality monitoring provisions for oil and gas development implemented through an HIA. Then in neighborhood revitalization and comprehensive planning, we've seen health-based standards increasingly being incorporated into these planning documents. So again, this is many steps out from actually something being built, but it's a plan that's going to guide what gets built where in a community and how, and that health based standards are now being applied, I think is again a fairly major development. The second thing we've heard a lot about is systems changes. So instead of what happened with your specific recommendation, what are the other benefits? And a lot of these I think were things that people wouldn't have had as an objective necessarily going in, but that we're really beginning to see as major benefits of HIA. So in San Francisco, they've actually done HIA for long enough that they developed their own health-based standards for the city's planning decisions, and these are now incorporated as largely as part of the city's planning process. And the health director, or the environmental health director, says they don't do a lot of HIAs anymore. They're actually, it's evolved to the point where this is just more routine. Lots of information about new partnerships and routine collaboration between health and other agencies that just wasn't there before. Federal permitting agencies in Alaska and it's beginning to spread into places like California and you'll hear some more about another region are now really looking at including health experts and health impacts on future environmental impact statements, not just for oil and gas actually, but for a number of different projects. Transportation in California is a big one. Industry is also using HIA to protect health and finding that actually it helps them. It helps them build better projects. It helps them actually build community support for their projects, because if they have a transparent, inclusive planning process that really addresses some of the community's major concerns about a big new project head on, it's much more likely that project is going to spawn less controversy, less litigation, and actually ultimately get a social license to operate. And also, I think it can't be underestimated as a way to really engage and inform and even empower community groups and build new partnerships between health agencies and community groups, another thing that we've seen a lot of. So, that's easy. So we are the Health Impact Project. We're a collaboration of Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Pew Charitable Trust, really designed to promote and support the use of HIA in the U.S. We're doing a number of things. We've had a demonstration grant funding initiative to fund HIAs around the U.S. to really help build the case. We're also convening some trainings and meetings and developing other resources to support the field more generally. We had tremendous response to the call for proposals. The blue states are the ones we got applications from. We ended up funding 13 HIAs. These are the topics. So wide-ranging topics we aim to get out of just built environment: cap and trade regulations, water conservation, light rail corridor planning, coal gasification power plants, utility regulation, state budget process, and farm-to-school legislation. Really a lot of topics where I think from a public health perspective, you can see the health implications pretty easily, but where health would not otherwise be considered. I'll just tell you about two quick lessons from early grantee progress. The first is, I think, just don't be shy. The groups that seem to be really out ahead are the ones that are making strong partnerships early on in their HIAs with decision makers and with communities, really pulling in, making steering committees, advisory committees, having multiple meetings, and really kind of getting the word out early on, not just thinking of this as a report that you finish and mail in, but something that you're really engaging people in the process. And the second is to be adaptable. This is the Wild West. This is not where you get to do a study and choose your timeline. This is policies. We've had grantees where the power plant that was proposed completely changed its fuel source, and many of the health impacts we were looking at went away. We've had a state legislature turn from Democratic majority in both houses to a Republican supermajority in both houses. We've had cap and state initiative to repeal the cap and trade bill that we were doing an HIA of implementing. And so, this is one of the challenges, is really being able to adapt and figure out where you're going to add value. So I think I would leave it there. Okay.